time's coming, boy, don't you know? Hard times are coming.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen, boy, welcome. Welcome. Pull a chair up to the table. Welcome to the Meeting of the Unknowing Minds podcast. As always, I'm your host, Matt Eshy, the head cross coach, associate head track and field coach at Alabama Birmingham at UAB. We have a tremendous show tonight. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a blast. But first and foremost, we got to thank Mr. Darren Flowers. Get that wonderful music coming in. Hard times are coming off of his EP that's going to be released here in, I think, early October, if I'm not mistaken. Darren, that's some tremendous stuff. That's old school blues right there, man.
Yeah, man, that's the real stuff. Actually, you know, that song was inspired a little bit by Stevie Ray Vaughan, Life by the Drop. You know, he went all acoustic on that one. And so that was, you know, I mean, that's how I learned to play. So I just kind of went back to my roots there. But yeah, I appreciate you promoting the music, man. That's my first passion before coaching. So yeah, it's a good deal.
I tell you what, I think we've all listened to it. We've all enjoyed it. I mean, you do keep doing a hell of a job. DarrenFlowersBooks.com. Am I correct on that?
That's right, man.
Yep, DarrenFlowersBooks.com. He's got a little kid's book going, but at the same time, the EP is there. It's well worth the listen if you haven't. Sit back and enjoy it. Relax. It's perfect little music. But as always, you know, it's perfect music to sit back, have some tea, get a cup of coffee if that's your choice right now while you're listening, or pop a top, whatever the case you might be doing. Go ahead and pop one, relax, pull that thing up, and let's get this Meeting of the Unknowing Minds going. We have an incredible guest. We're going to introduce him here in a second. We have Kevin Hatz on the show, longtime coach in Division One for many, many years. There's a few stops. We'll talk about those in a second. He's got some phenomenal ideas with what he's doing with the ATL, with his promotion company, things like that. We're going to get into that here in a second. But first, as always, you heard Darren Flowers. He's on the podcast. He's rocking and rolling, moving around. We're going to get to him more in a bit as we get going. But we've got the gentleman who always loves green screens in the back. I'm surprised he hasn't done something fun every once in a while. But Mr. John Bell from St. Louis. John, how are we doing, sir?
We're doing great. It's fun to be here this evening. You know, last week I was coaching triple jumpers in 90-degree humid day. So this is much more enjoyable in my home office here. So excited to have this conversation.
What is it in St. Louis right now? Is it about to talk to my Milwaukee, it was like 45 degrees, and they're like, where did this come
right
from?
Now it's only 82, but humidity is right about 80%, so it feels lovely.
We've got Coach Herb, who is still looking to figure out what books he can put on that top shelf. He's got a picture probably of himself, you know, back in the day. But Coach Herb out of Indiana, how we doing, sir?
Man, well, you notice the books haven't moved, but and that's actually a picture of if you can't see it because we're not on video, but it's my dad and my uncle when they were little playing football. So it's
that's awesome.
It's actually a pretty cool photo. But hey, we trained three times so far this week, so I'm in a much better mood than I've been for about the past 6 months. So I'm just excited to be out in the elements and doing what I love to do, and so it's nice to have this as a little evening wind down. This is good.
And I'm glad you guys are out training finally. That's a good thing. We the big weight off your shoulders, I would have to assume, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, and we're all just holding our breath, you know, waiting on results coming back, because as soon as we pass the threshold, then we get paused, and it shut down quite a few of our sports here at Indiana the past week, and we're still going. So we're counting on 20-year-olds to make good decisions.
You're 20-year-olds, please make a good decision.
I'm just hoping to make good decisions myself, and yeah. So,
look who you're talking to, bro.
Yeah, right.
trust me on one thing. Before getting to Kevin, I mean, we get the opportunity to race this weekend on Friday. Friday night, we head down to Mobile, get to kick the season off. I think it's the first cross country meet of the year for colleges, for collegiately. I know there's been some junior colleges that have started. No disrespect to them, coaches, if you guys are listening, athletes, if you're listening. But I know the first D1 meet is Friday at 5:50 over in Mobile, the Azalea City Classic in South Alabama. So we got testing tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Let's pray that everything goes smoothly. But all signs point to us rocking and rolling, so I'm excited about that. So I got to give a good shout-out, as much as they may or may not listen to our administration, who's been pushing, probably the only school that's been pushing from the start to make sure that we are competing this fall. They have been the flag bearers. So you got a school like UAB Medical going to do that. So, but we're not, you guys aren't here to listen to us talk about, you know, what's going on in our schools. You guys got enough things going on, whether you're in high school or college or you're retired trying to figure things out. And a gentleman who's essentially been retired working on good looks, his acting career, all that kind of stuff. We've got, I'm going to go with it. Coach Kevin Hassel is on the show tonight. Kevin, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, man. Doing great. Just out here in LA right now. Chilling in Burbank. I got to film a TV commercial tomorrow. So,
okay. So, I mean, have you been out there for a couple of days? You said you got out there today. Do you have, are you going to do one gig? You can do two or three?
No, actually. So, you know, obviously the entire entertainment industry had shut down as well. And, but I've been fortunate, that this is actually my third commercial I've done in the last 4 weeks. Okay. All three of them out here in LA, but I actually went back and forth each time. So I was just here last week doing one for a company that does like GPS tracking systems for cars, and okay. And I flew back, and then I just flew back today to do this one for a Honda ATV motorcycle commercial filming tomorrow, and then I head back to the East Coast. So,
do you think if we keep
just jet setting, bro?
You're doing it. I mean, think if we keep talking about like the GPS system and the ATV, and we talk about Honda a little bit more and Drive Coffee or whatever we want to be able to do, like maybe we could actually get them to sponsor.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that, brother.
I know. But
well, so, I gotta interrupt though, Matt.
Go ahead.
I listened to Mike Cunningham at Gill Athletics does a great job with his podcast. Listen to his interview with Kevin. I listened to it the last 2 days. I mean, he went 3 hours. I hope we don't go 3 hours tonight. But Kevin, you said your kind of dream gig is to do action movies, right? I think something like that. Okay. Yeah. So with this ATV commercial, what are we doing? We're not going to be going off jumps. No action.
No, man. I wish, bro. Oh, okay. Yeah. No, it's they can't. You know, typically speaking, I get cast a lot as just like blue collar type guy, and so I was cast as a rancher, so jumps, no, you know, although when I was a kid, you know, race BMX bikes and you know, rode dirt bikes and stuff like that. I mean, I could take a couple of jumps if they'd let me, but I can't envision that happening tomorrow.
not that kind of commercial, unfortunately.
We're gonna be the stunt.
No, not that kind of commercial, man.
Man, well, yeah, I'm not going to dig in. Well, it's a good point. We could just make him a stunt double, let him go ahead and do it, whatever he needs to do and that kind of stuff. But Kevin, so how did you get into coaching, get into doing this kind of stuff? I mean, I know a little bit about your background, but go ahead and tell people who haven't heard it a little bit, you know, how did you get into it? I know where you started out, all that kind of stuff.
You broke out a little bit there. You're talking about my coaching career?
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. Yes. No. So, yeah, tell us.
My acting career.
The coaching career. Let's start in the coaching career. Is that me? Here we go. You back?
I can hear you now. Yeah, I couldn't hear you a second ago. Yeah.
This is what happens, guys, when you actually do this live. You don't hit pause. You just let things go and see what happens. Okay. So, let's start. Let's try this one more time, right? Let's go with the coaching career, how you started out, how you got into it, and then we'll go that route.
Mm. Okay, yeah. So I actually had moved on a whim down to Myrtle Beach, South. Well, first I moved to Orlando, and then my buddies and I moved to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is right after college in 1992. And I ended up becoming neighbors with a girl that ran cross country at Coastal Carolina University. And in 1993, Coastal Carolina made the decision to add track and field. Mm-hmm. I was actually a decathlete in college. And so I contacted the coach and, you know, hey, I'd really like to coach. You know, it was actually a dream of mine to become a college coach. I just didn't know how I would end up doing it. And so I actually had made the decision that I was going to go back to college because I went to University of Vermont, and I was going to be a teacher. Well, after student teaching, I had no desire to become a teacher. So I didn't really know what I wanted to do. But I was actually a writer, and I loved sports and athletics and whatnot. So in any event, I enrolled in Coastal Carolina University to earn a second degree in journalism. And I actually lived on campus and everything. And so this, I'd already passed my fifth year, but this would have been like my sixth year of college, basically. And I was just living on campus and volunteering, you know, basically as like a student assistant. Yep. And that was how I got my coaching career started. But I actually at first was helping coach the non-distance kids because they just added track. But actually, I had become more and more interested in the distance side of things and started recruiting for distance. But really, I became obsessed with learning about how the different training systems worked. And, you know, I had mentioned on the other podcast that I was on that essentially I became somewhat obsessed with trying to understand why it was that everyone back then in the 90s, in the early 90s, everybody just trained like one way. Like a program was like a Jack Daniels program, or it was a Bowerman program, or it was a Lydiard program. And not being a distance runner, in my head, I was like, well, why does it have to be one or the other? You know, because you have all of these different types of training systems have shown to success, or else, you know, people wouldn't be following them. But why can't you use aspects of all of these and create your own system? That was my whole thing about it. Yeah. And so while I was at Coastal, we ended up building that program from just being a good Big South team to my last year in 96, we, on the women's side, we were the first team not to go to the NCAAs out of nowhere. We finished third in the old South region back then. That was region three. Uh-huh. Back in the day, at 80 something schools.
Yep.
We finished third. We didn't make it, but there was only 22 teams that made it to the NCAAs back then. Uh-huh. And we were ranked as high as 22nd in the NCAA pool. And most people didn't even know who we were. And so from there, and I was half sports information, half coach. And they eliminated the halftime sports information because they wanted to hire a full-time sports info guy, and I didn't want to do that. They told me, obviously, they offered me the job, but I would have to quit coaching, and I wanted to be a coach. So I started looking. I was hired by Willie Wood to be his assistant up at Columbia.
Yep, good job.
So, yeah, so I left in 97. I was at Columbia, living in New York, and we really got the men's program going back then. We went from last in the heptagonals, yep, which is the Ivy League championships, but it's called the Heps because Army and Navy used to be in it. We went from last to runner up in 1 year and took a couple guys to the NCAAs. And then that following year, I was hired at Toledo where I would go and spend 15 years there and built that program up from, you know, scratch, literally, to by the time I resigned, you know, we had gone to three straight NCAAs at large on the women's side. And I had won five MAC championships and had an American record holder and a whole bunch of good stuff. So that's the Reader's Digest. That's a Cliff Note version of my coaching career right there, brother.
that's a pretty good Cliff Notes. Remind me, I think it was – I remember hearing that. You've told me that a couple times before, so I'm glad I heard it. I'm glad people have heard it as well. How many girls did you, or ladies did you have when you started out at Toledo? Was it four or five?
There were four women. Yeah. When I got there a week before the school mm-hmm. started in August of 98. Mm-hmm. And I got a couple of 400 meter runner girls to come out mm-hmm. and a couple of literally like 24 minute 5K girls to come out. Just so we could field the team. That was my first year in 98. We set the record for the worst score in MAC history. Back then there was 13 schools in the MAC because Marshall was in the MAC back then. And we scored 357 points at the cross country championships, which, you know, when there's 13 teams, there's 91 scoring opportunities, and we essentially averaged like 71st place. You know, it's it was impressive. I mean, if you're, you know, you're going to be last, bro. I mean, you might as well just be dead last, right?
You better do be last and do a very good job being last. That's 71st place averages.
Man, you know, and we had a chance. You know, the funny thing is, like, I knew we were going to be last.
Yeah.
But we actually, going into that year, going into the MAC championships that week, I thought we had a shot to be second to last, which, no exaggeration, would have tied for the highest ever finish in Toledo history. Would have been second to last was the highest they'd ever finished. It was either last or second to last, so all 18 years, you know. But the girl that was my top girl, her name's Sarah Vergodi, who's now the women's cross country coach at Ohio State.
Yep.
She was a freshman that year, and she got hurt. And I had a rule all through my entire coaching career. I never would run somebody that's hurt, ever. And my feeling was, if you've got to tape it, then how good is it really going to be? How, you know, there are more important things than running. So didn't run her, and we ended up last, you know. So, but then 4 years later, we won the conference 4 years later.
Which is an incredible turnaround. I felt, you know, we've had lucky to be able to turn some programs around, but I don't know if we've never been able to win a conference title in 4 years. We did 5 years at Bradley, but four for a team that was that bad. Our cupboard was bare,
yeah,
but not that bare.
You know, it was a wild ride, but, you know, as I've said many times, the kids, the girls that were in the program when my first year, they really bought into it. And it wasn't a situation where I came in and instead of recruiting, I was replacing type of deal. That wasn't my feeling on how I wanted to do it. I wanted to make the kids that were there better.
Yeah.
But of course I had to increase the recruiting, you know, and bring in more quality, but, you know, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't last or first in 1 year. I mean, it was 13th to 8th to 4th to winning it. And that team that won it was actually ranked all year. Back then, we only ranked 25 teams. And we were ranked 24th, 25th, you know, for the majority of that year, that first year we won it. So,
yeah. So you resigned at Toledo.
It was a good group.
That's a hell
of a... Of course, it didn't hurt that I had a girl transfer in that would eventually set the American record in the steeplechase. That never hurts.
No, that and having Vergodi up front. I mean, that's a very lethal 1-2 punch. No matter, it doesn't matter who it is. We'd all take that any day of the week. You know?
Yeah. In 2002, Brianna Shook won the MAC cross country individual title, and Sarah finished second. Mm-hmm. You know, those two solid runners right there, man. And they both went to the NCAAs that year.
It's impressive what it is. It really is. It's an incredible job. I give you props for doing a hell of a job turning around that stuff. And, you know, Columbia, you did a hell of a job as well. So you kind of had to take that. You're acting now. We know that. You're out in California. You mentioned that being out in Burbank. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing, a little bit more about what you're doing, if you would, and how that – and because the one thing you have done, you've got a production company, if I'm correct, a production company.
Yeah.
Promotion, excuse me, not production, but promotion, maybe both.
Well, both, really, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you've been working with one of our former guests on the fourth or fifth podcast. Go back and listen to it. It was called Blow It Up. That was Brian Fetzer. He was on here as well talking about different ways of doing things, thinking outside the box, calling us crazy for still being in coaching, which I think everybody here in coaching would agree that we're probably still crazy, dumb, whatever the case might be, but we do love what we do. But tell us what you're doing with the company. Tell us how that works with the ATL, not the Atlanta, but the American Track League.
Yeah, so what happened was when I first moved to New York City on a whim to become an actor, I was literally living out of my car for 18 months to make it happen before I got to the point where I had earned my SAG card, my Screen Actors Guild card. Yep. And in that time, like, I was holding down a couple of survival jobs. A buddy of mine owned a black car service. I was working for a cat rescue. Yeah, I mean, it was like, you know, just typical, like, Hollywood-ish story, you know, just trying to make it, you know what I mean? And But, you know, because I had always been a track coach, I essentially, I don't know, it's just not in my DNA to have to work for somebody. I just can't do it. You know, I mean, it's just not, I can't have a regular job in life. So basically I would just made the decision like, well, what can I do where I don't have to work for someone else, where I can just work for myself and I can just make this happen, you know? And so I actually started my own concert production company, and I started booking some friends of mine, booking them gigs, small gigs, you know? And I had partnered up with a talent agency in New York City to handle their special events. Mm-hmm. And when I was with that company, I wasn't working for them. I was working with them. Yep. And the dude that owned the company was like, in my opinion, just not a very good human being. Right. And so I'm like, you know, why am I even partnering with anybody? Why don't I just do it myself? You know, I'm just going to do it myself. So I started my own company. And so I started booking bigger and bigger gigs. And then I was like, well, why am I just taking, you know, 10 or 15%? Why don't I just rent the theater and sell the tickets and keep all the money, you know? Yeah. And so,
might as well.
So it just kind of snowballed from there to where now, you know, we produce that production company and promotion company will produce and promote live events all over the country, whether it's music or sporting events. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I will partner with an outside company or an outside venue as partners. Sometimes I'll just rent it and I'll just go on the nut for the whole thing, you know? Yeah. And I'm kind of a gambler, just in real life. I'm a gambler. I mean, I obviously anybody knows my story. I take great risks, you know, and yeah. Sometimes yeah. It works out, bro. And sometimes it don't, but you know, yeah. It's a whole different kind of gambling when you've got $100,000 on the nut and you're selling tickets, trying to make a profit, you know? And so that company just kept growing and growing. And then about maybe like 6 months or so ago, maybe closer to 8 months or so, I was talking with Brian Fetzer. And Brian was working with American Track League, and which is owned by Doyle Management, by yep. some of the top sprinters and jumpers in the world,
yep.
and talent in the world, and they were talking about, you know, creating a new way of marketing track and field, and bringing track and field into mainstream athletics as best that they can, and basically identifying like, why don't people watch it except for once every 4 years? And so the more we got talking, and talking with Brian and talking with Paul Doyle, it's like, I'm like, man, what you guys are talking about sounds a whole hell of a lot like what I do. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, in terms of creating live events and marketing them and finding a way to draw attention and brand it and grow it, you know? So we ended up partnering up. So now for the next 3 years, my company is the marketing and promotions branch of American Track League. So my job in all of this is to help create this brand of track meets and track events, track style events that we can take to, and which we've already done also with, you know, taking the pole vault event to YouTube streaming. Now they did that on their own before I partnered with them, to be fair, but basically that's the model. Mm-hmm. And right now we're working on, well, of course, COVID, you know,
COVID's yep.
affected everything, you know, but yep. basically, the entire partnership here is that we want to create something that's different. We love track and field. We all love track and field.
Agreed.
And, but we also know that there's a lot of things that are wrong with track and field. you know, we have, in our opinion, my opinion, a leadership within the sport that is fairly corrupt, right? I mean, we have a model that doesn't seem to work, you know, aside from parents. I mean, even former athletes don't go to meets.
Yeah.
You know, you think about how many former NCAA track athletes there have been that are living today, all three divisions. Then you throw in NAIA, JUCO. You think about how many, and then you throw in high school, how many people have done track and field and they don't go to the meets unless they have some sort of connection to the meet. You know, you have some hardcore guys that, you know, your Walt Murphys of the world that just love it. And they'll go to every, you know, national event, to go to the Penn Relays, and Penn Relays is always huge. You got all the Jamaican kids and, you know, but aside from that, you know, people're not attracted to it, you know? So, and people don't understand it. I mean, that's a big part of the problem, you know? And particularly at the college level, people don't get it. I mean, I was college track coach Division I for 22 years, man. I barely get it, right? And so basically our whole thing is that we want to try and create a professional, not just professional, we're talking youth, college, mm-hmm. creating collegiate meets that are of a different style and a different brand. And the professional meets, so that they're streamlined and they're easy to understand and they're marketable. And that's basically no different than me renting it's nothing for me to go and rent a track and put on a meet. I mean, how much is it going to cost me? 10 grand, whatever. I mean, you know, in the general scheme of things, it's not that much money, right?
Yeah.
So same thing as if I'm going to go and rent a venue. Mm-hmm. I'm rent a venue. I'm going to spend $10,000 renting a venue, not including sound and lights and everything else, and then go on the nut for the artists. You know, so it's the same thing. Let's just create events. Let's just do whatever we want, because who says we can't? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's basically my attitude about just life in general, really. And Brian's and Doyle management, everybody, like, it's just like, who's to say we can't do what we want to do? We can do whatever we want to do, you know. We can create just a pole vault event. Yep. Who says we can't? Right? Maybe just a shot put event. You know, we've got the best shot putter in the world right now, but
we do.
People can't pick them off the street.
No,
you know.
Yeah, I think it's something that you hit on, and it's we've talked about this at length, I think, on this show, on this podcast. And I know the guys are going to jump in here in a second because they're itching to get going on it. But one of the biggest things, and we've talked about it, Jordan Gray talked about it as well. Let's give her props here. She's, I mean, incredible. Has talked about the fundamental change from top to bottom. I think for the most part, it is attempting to be done on the soccer side as well. If you look at U.S. soccer from a whole, I mean, the top is changing, but the bottom, and then what they did is they didn't change just the top. They didn't change that at all. They went down to the grassroots and how they actually produce their kids, because they know they're getting their asses kicked playing soccer and playing football. Let's just be honest here. They're playing football and watching the goat, and they couldn't keep up with that kind of stuff. Track and field in general, you're right. We talked about it. Herb, you've had some great ideas on what to do with changing the sport, changing meets, doing that kind of stuff. That's one reason all of us here in this podcast, we're turned on by the fact of doing that, what Sandy had in the backyard, the promotion of it, the videos of it. I mean, we couldn't get enough because it was incredibly done. It was, that was unbelievable. I mean, true to its form, grassroots. Mm-hmm. You could be in and out and done, watch dinner while you're doing that thing, being out and done in a couple hours and off you go. And we all knew, being track guys, if you can vault and go through it, we've always said that if you can, I've always said this, and I think most of you guys agree, if you can be in and out and done and only miss one meal, you're doing okay. Because no one wants to miss two meals. That's too damn long. Because you see, 12 to 1, dinner's at 5:30 or so. If it's something's going that long, like we need to be doing something else with it. But shrink it down. Why don't we? Why can't we shrink it down? Product that you can push out and go for it. John, you look like you're ready to rock and roll here.
Well, I was just going to say, I think our biggest problem is, and I think Kevin just kind of hit on it, is I got to watch what I say here. with corrupt leadership, you know, I think it's why it won't change at the collegiate level is because the way the sport is structured within sports sponsorship requirements and with the way qualifying works for the NCAA championships. Like, it would be great to be able to just send sprinters to use a field event, the shot put, right? Because Ryan Krause is just lighting it up recently. Yeah. It would be awesome to be able to send, you know, the best shot putters in the country to one little competition. You have like 10 to 12 guys and compete at a really, really high level, but it doesn't count as a meet. And so you have these structural problems within the NCAA and that's where we're going to get stuck at the collegiate level, you know, but at the professional level, do what you want. I mean, these small meets this summer have proven that there's something to be had there. But I just think we're going to run into a roadblock at the collegiate level until we change the structure of how sports sponsorship works, how qualifying for the NCAA championships works, you know, until you get around those hurdles, no pun intended. I mean, there's just, we're stuck. I hate throwing up the white flag because I'm very much about change, but you know, we have an identity crisis. Are we a team sport? Are we an individual sport? I mean, what are we?
Question.
Well, I'm on the outside now, which is great because I don't have to watch what I say, of course, you know. To me, I think that this is because of COVID and everything that's going on, this is actually a perfect opportunity to restructure because everything's being restructured anyway. So this whole 10 events and 14 competitors, in order for it to be called a meet, to me, that's antiquated. And because it's those 10 events that is making this last so long. It's the 14 competitors per team in order to count it as a meet that's forcing these schools to enter, you know, 80 kids in an indoor meet. And we've got 35 rounds of the men's 200 followed by 30 rounds of the women's 200. You know,
you don't want to take
200s? I got nothing wrong with the 200. It's the 70 rounds of the 200 I got a problem with. But
I agree with
that. But it's, you know, if I was in charge, if I had an op, you know, if somebody said, hey, what would be the best thing, that would be one of the first things that I would eliminate is that. But I think it goes even beyond that, because the problem is, here's the problem with track coaches, in my opinion, because I was one for so many years. Right. And I was guilty of it for a long time as well. We want, and I've said this before, I've said on Let's Run, you know, anybody that knows me, man, I post under my real name, right?
Yep.
I've said it, and you know, people squawk at it, and honestly, people can say whatever they want to say, but the reality is that track coaches, by and large, fear change. They don't want to change. What they want is their athletic director and everyone to give them the same amount of respect that the other sports give, but they don't want to change at all to be anything like the other sports. All I ever hear from other coaches is, well, we're different. Well, we're different. Well, we're different. They don't get us because we're different. And now, particularly on the outside, my advice is, dude, stop saying that you're different, right? Because that's just a cop-out. Stop saying that it's different. Think outside the box. How can you make your sport relevant like the other sports? Because newsflash, it's not like people are lining up out the door to go watch tennis, wrestling, any of these other sports. They don't watch those sports either, okay? Those guys, you go on their message boards, they complain about the same thing. But they don't want to change. But you look at these other sports, at least they have win-loss records, right? At least they have a conference standing where the school is ranked. You know what track coaches don't like? Being ranked. That's what they don't like. Because they know in a 13-team conference, somebody's got to be 13th.
See, I got to
tell you. And that's just the reality of it.
Yeah, I got
to. Yeah.
And this is less a question and more just a thank goodness somebody else is thinking this as well, and maybe to blow that up a little bigger. Yep. I think we have a inclusivity problem in terms of numbers, and where when we, and this kind of comes back to your point about, you know, being ranked and having a record and all these other sort of things, right? Like, we're really happy, and I'm in a Power Five Division One NCAA university, right?
Yep.
And we don't need to put six people in an event any more than any, you know, SLU or UAB or whatever does, right? In a meet that doesn't mean anything anyway, except for we're giving everybody a chance to compete. Mm-hmm. Hey, listen, thank you. So what is the 12th guy on the basketball team get to do, right? He gets to sit on a bench and watch basketball games. What is
not
the
third, even suit up.
Baby, right? What is a third string quarterback doing? He's warming up the punter or something like that before, and maybe he gets to sit on a bench for some home games or whatever. Meanwhile, we're looking for opportunities to put everybody in these meets. I'm curious to hear some more specific ideas just regarding, you know, conference or, you know, collegiate level competition. But I see it, if we could say, hey, listen, here's what you get to do. There's going to be four teams at this meet. You get to enter two people. Two people. We're going to score it, whatever we're going to score it, 5-3-2-1, whatever, top two. And when you get done, you either won the meet or you didn't win the meet. And guess what? That's going to count toward a conference ranking. And shoot, that might even count. You might not get to the conference tournament. You might not get in the conference championship, because if you're in the Big Ten and you're number 11 or 12 or 13, hey, we're taking 10 teams to the Big Ten championship meet, right? And now all of a sudden you're putting two people in. You can get that meet done in 2.5-3 hours. You could see something that's meaningful. You could see something that matters. And everybody's counting toward something that is, you know, toward the team, you know. And yes, some kids got to stay home. That's, you know, that's just what it is. And then maybe we get some parity, because we don't need six triple jumpers on the team, right? You know, so you got these programs that are all distance or all sprints or whatever. Well, hey, guess what? Your eighth guy doesn't make it, no matter how good they are. So guess what? Maybe they come compete for me now because they don't have a shot with you. Yeah. Just like, you know, so I'm sorry to go on the rant. The question if I get the microphone, I'll take it. But I'm curious to hear what your thoughts are in the collegiate model, and how do we work within, you know, team competitions to create something that's exciting and worth watching and that people might actually, you know, pay to see.
So I was actually just having this conversation the other day with Brian Fetzer, because I mean, we both were Division I head coaches for many, many years, and
yep.
I came out of the same system and everything. So what we're trying to create with American Track League is a Diamond League type of events, 3 hours. That's it. Mm-hmm. And when particularly like what we're doing right now is we're trying to organize a four or five meet indoor circuit and a four or five meet outdoor circuit, where indoors, as an example, we only run the 60, the 60 hurdles, the long jump, the pole vault, and the shot put. That's it. That's consistent with all the meets. Now, some meets may be in bigger facilities where we can add 1,000, add the mile, the proper mile, you know, because people understand the proper mile, add the high jump, whatever. But the core events are just those events. So my conversation with Brian essentially was, dude, what if college track and field did the same thing? It was actually, so every other sport, we're the only sport for the most part that for some reason we can only compete on Saturday and Friday, right? Every other sport, they're playing on Tuesday, they're playing on Wednesday, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And obviously we don't want to go to a meet on a Tuesday under the current structure, because we got to have 14 kids, we got to have 10 events, blah, blah, blah. But what if your Tuesday meets were only tri meets? It was only two sprinting events, two throwing events, two jumping events, and two distance events, right? That's it. Again, two people per event, just like you were saying. There's a team score. And at the end, you're either going to be 2-0, 1-1 or 0-2 because they're tri meets.
Yep.
And then in a 12 team conference, like it, so that's your Tuesday meets. Your conference, for the most part, I mean, obviously Big Ten, some of these other ones are pretty spread out, but hey, so's every other sport. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But if the if your team standings, right, in these tri meets were on Tuesdays, you can still have invitationals on the weekend, right? You just don't need to run those events. You no longer have to run the 60 hurdles, the 60 dash, those events on Tuesday, they're just on Tuesday. And if you have time for them on Saturday, then you can run them on Saturday. You can still have an invitational, but it whittles it down, you know?
Yeah, but, Kevin, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's going to take a top-down approach, almost like what you guys are doing with American Track League? It almost has to become the norm for spectators and people to really like it, for the NCAA to wake up and say, hey, maybe we do need to adopt this model.
Yeah. I mean, well, first of all, you can just do it. You don't need the NCAA's, permission,
yeah,
except
I know,
for the fact that it's 10 events and the 14. But I do understand. But you know what? People will understand it because there's a team score. People will understand it all. They don't need to understand what a good time is. They can see clearly it's a tri meet. There's two people per event. There's six lanes. There's one heat of the 60. Bam. I see where everybody finished. Okay, there, bam, up on the scoreboard, there's a score. All right, let's go to the next event. And you only do one event at a time, except the pole vault, which takes longer. So then the people are watching each event. They see it. It's happening right in front of them, right? Take 2 hours, 3 hours, just like a regular sporting event does, you know? But at the end of the indoor season, now you have a team record. And in my opinion, like in the MAC, so we got 12 schools, right?
Yep.
So you got 12 schools. Everybody competes against each other. It would be easy to figure out a four-week schedule where everybody competed against each other. And then only the top 9 teams qualify for the MAC championship. The MAC tournament for track and field would then be three-team meets. Okay, seeded accordingly from your win-loss records, just like every other sport. Any administrator can figure that out. Those three team meets, the winner of each of those three semifinal meets, those three teams meet for the team championship.
Okay. Yeah, there you go.
And it's a tri meet, right? You can. So here's one thing about me. Like when I was coaching, I loved athletics in general, not just track. I love sports. I love athletics in general. My best friends were other coaches. I would talk with them. I was always curious, how does your sport work? How do you get to the NCAAs? How does all these, you know? So like the sport of tennis, well, tennis has a team championship. It also has an individual tournament as well.
Golf
separate from the team.
Golf is the same way, I believe. Right?
Well, they're together, but yeah, it's like cross country where you have individual and team, you know, but there's nothing to say that we can't start creating a team championship. This could even be on to the NCAA level where you have, it wouldn't take a lot of time, 3 weeks maybe, you know, where the teams that win that try meet for the MAC championship team would then qualify for the NCAA team championships. And there's only 6 events, 2 sprint, 2 jump, 2 throws, 8 events and 2 distance.
John, jump
and
in.
It's tri meets. Yeah. And the winner of each tri meet moves on. It's simple. But every
and I feel like you're preaching to a group that, man, this is like gospel to us, man.
Because the problem is people don't get the sport. And we have I had some great distance teams, man. Great distance teams. But what was lost in the shuffle that I'm equally as proud of, I had some good track teams too, man. I mean, we were MAC runner-up in track. We lost on the 4x4 to Kent State my last year as a coach. Scored 140-something points at the MAC Outdoor Championships. Yeah, you know, we had 20-foot long jumpers. We had 45-foot triple jumpers. We had javelin. I mean, we were a good track team also, you know. because I was a decathlete. I mean, I was a track guy, you know, I wasn't even a distance guy. I just happened to have great distance runners, you know, but I think that other coaches, people are afraid of that. People are literally afraid of that. They're afraid of change. They're afraid of having to be ranked. They're afraid of not making it to the championship. When I was in the MAC, I was the catalyst for creating a qualifying procedure for the MAC indoor. I hated going to the MAC championships, and we had two heats of the 3000. We had all this, you know, it was an all-comers meet. And I was like, why are we doing an all-comers meet, man? Why don't we do like the NCAA does? You just have 18 competitors, period. It's the same exact number, 18 competitors. You don't make it, you stay home. And a couple of the coaches in the programs that were struggling were like, well, what if we don't get anybody that qualifies? And my answer was,
run faster.
Tough shit.
You know, what do you want me to say to that? You know what I mean?
Run faster.
You know,
my AD says you don't have track meets for slow people.
I mean, for real, man. You know, the whole thing was, we instituted that rule where it was top 18 declared, right? And what happened to the MAC in the 10 years since we started doing that? The level of competition in every event has gone higher because now there's a standard, there's a bar. And back when we first were having it, all you had to do was run 5.0 something, you make the fast heat of the mile before there was a standard on the women's side. Now, if you don't run under 4:50, you're probably not making the fast heat. But if there was no standard, if you didn't have to race your way into the championship, we'd still be stuck in second gear. You know, I mean, we had great individuals. I'm not saying we didn't, but
yep.
But people fear change. But I'm looking at it from the outside now. It's like, it's such a great sport. It is the purest of all sports. You know, there are aspects. What makes people in other sports great is that they can do something in track and field really well. You're a great quarterback. You got a great arm. Right, you're a great running back, great wide receiver. You're fast, yep. Right? You're agile. You're a great lineman. You're probably really strong, right? There are aspects of track and field in every sport, and so we need to capitalize on that, and we need to be like other sports and stop saying, "Well, we're different," because this whole thing, we're different. I've been around college coaching now for 30 years. People saying the same shit over and over again. And it's like, I even made the comment on Let's Run a couple years ago. I said, it's so funny to me that like, these are the same conversations. It's the same conversations. And the funny thing is, there'll be a lot of young guys coming in and they're saying the same thing. I know they're not making it up. They're hearing it from the older coaches and they're believing it. Right? Don't be defeatist. Think outside, you know, and don't be afraid of having to be ranked. I was never afraid of that. You know, why should you be afraid? If my team is last, I should be fired. Right? I should be fired.
Absolutely.
If I suck.
No doubt about that. Absolutely. You suck, you should be fired.
But look at how many track coaches keep their job. They can't finish in the top 2/3 of their conference. It's pathetic. You know, it's not them as human beings. I'm not judging them as humans. They're probably nice people. You know what I mean? Yeah. But dude, if you can't finish in the top 2/3 of your conference, I don't know, ever, what are you doing? What are you doing? I mean, come on. Find something else to do. Give somebody else a shot.
I think you hit on something there. I agree with you on that. If you're not trying, at least hitting that thing, because as we all know, and I think just to, the best way forward is some schools' limitations just never going to happen with what it is, the amount of money that a school puts into that. So trying your tail off, getting some good athletes, you can still make some stuff happen with your walking on. As many people know, I've attempted to change cross country, I think for the last, what, John, 5, 6, 7 years, whatever the chase, I don't even know how long it's been.
I think since you've been coaching.
Yeah. I think you've been blacklisted from proposals now.
I know one thing. I've been black.
I think there's been proposals that you can't make anymore.
Mm-hmm. I got another one here, actually. I haven't put it out yet for qualifying, but I'm not getting there yet. Don't worry. But
you've hit the limit.
Yeah, I've been blacklisted from at least, I know that for a fact, of like committees I can try and help because people just don't, they think I'm focused on one. I'm not focused on one. My system, I believe, worked. I've had people look at it. John looked at it. Darren looked at it. Other people looked at it and said, you know what, this actually works. I have to change my game. No question about that. I would change how my game plays, but it works. I believe an RPI system in cross country works. I believe a win-loss record in cross country works. I believe a strength of schedule can work in a sport, but it goes back to the whole thing of this is what we can do. This is what an administrator believes in. This is what it is, but we sure as hell cannot explain our sport, cross country especially. Track is a circus. You watch track and field from up above in the rafters and you go, there's people running a circle. There's people jumping over things. Somebody's throwing something. Nobody knows what's going on. The only way that we actually get there is, and again, I'm going to give him some credit, Mike Jay, one of our former guests on a podcast, you know, does a tremendous job announcing track and field meets. One of the best voices in all of track and field. One of the best researchers in all of track and field. Mm. He does it right when he does it. He and John Y do a tremendous job working those meets at Drake Relays, the Iowa stuff. So you at least are entertained. But if you don't have people that don't know what's going on, you can't do it. And if you can't get the educated people to be talked about with those meets, dude, it just goes by the wayside. So yes, you have to get out of the idea of being of change. Like you have to go idea of status quo. Cause I think just in general, even in life, if you have status quo, it's normality, it's death on a stick and you're done.
Yeah.
And you keep going through the same meets. And so it is, I mean, you touched on qualifying standards. Love it. You know, or at least X amount to the heat. Okay. I love it. Whatever the case might be, let's change it up. Let's get this thing exciting. And if we have to on a Tuesday night, I have no idea. And the thing is, I think you mentioned earlier, we would have to fundamentally change. We wouldn't have to change a sport. We would just be able to call a duel or a practice or something like that. I don't know what the NCAA title would be, but do a Tuesday night meet. You know what? Indiana, SLU, you guys are closer than us. We are, and UAB and UTRGV are. So you guys get together for a Tuesday night duel with 2-2-2 and have fun with it, promote it, and off you go. I know there's a lot of hoops to jump through, but we would have to start that and would pick up steam because even Kevin, I think if your group did it, it would be great. It's awesome. It helps the sport. You could do a throws one. You can do a jumps one. You can do what Bowerman Track Club has done with Chris Schweitzer on there. Like they've done incredible jobs, but for the collegiate level to do it, we can follow the model, but until we can actually believe it and prove it to administration that it works, it goes. But I mean, then we can get the stadiums. Then Texas A&M Stadium can work well. Then UAB, our brand new track, that can be used really, really well. But small little meets like that, I mean, hell, Dave Milner up at the Run DMC, Run Distance Music, or the Music, I'm sorry, Run MDMC, the Music City Distance Carnival, mm-hmm. The guys up there do a great job. And that thing is packed when it comes to a meet. It's quick, it's short, it's 2.5 hours, it's good competition, it's meets, it's in, it's out, it's done. So we got to change. Well, going to be coaches.
I think that, yeah, and one thing that we have to keep in mind, when you look at the other sports, and particularly the revenue sports at the conference level. Just the other day, the Mid-American Conference put a release out about men's and women's basketball. And what were they releasing? They decide who plays who and when. They decide. They decide who plays who in football. They decide who plays who in soccer. They decide who plays who and when in volleyball. We're just off willy-nilly doing whatever we want to. So it takes people, it's going to take coaches doing the one thing that they don't want to do, and that's give up control. They want to control everything around them. Track and field and cross-country coaches are typically type A personalities, all or none. Mm-hmm. They typically want, they're to the point where we're overbearing at times. So we try to control everything. Can't control everything. You know what I mean? If you want to be taken seriously by your administration and you want to be taken seriously by your conference, then you, in my opinion, you have to be willing to let them get involved with this. So like I could right now, if I wanted to, in 10 minutes, I could figure out a schedule of Tuesday meets for any conference. Give me 10 minutes. Tell me which schools have the tracks. I'll figure it out. Boom. I'll tell you who's going to do who, play who, and I'll just rotate serpentine-wise so that I can make sure that the people that have indoor tracks are the ones that run the meets. And there's your season. And the conference just says, hey, this here's when you have a meet. And here's your one loss record. And so, here's the deal. Now everybody's going to qualify for the championship.
So question on this, I think legitimate question, because I was at Bradley, and anybody knows we don't have a track. Bradley did not, let me rephrase my usage of words here. Bradley did not have a track because, I mean, you had to use a high school track that was a couple miles away, and one of them was unbelievably run down. So then you have a program like Bradley that goes, look, because you can't have a hammer cage, you can't have the javelin, you can't have a lot of those things because, not because they don't want to, but because they're just not allowed to with this space that they have. So what do you do? The Missouri Valley, okay, great conference right there. You know, some really good schools. What do you do? You can't really put Illinois State versus Bradley in a track meet because it's going to be the distance events and the no distance events. I mean,
we've talked about this before. I think you're going to get into a situation where administrations have to put up or shut up, right? Yeah. It's either all or nothing. Like, they're either going to eliminate the sport because they can't, you know, they can't fund building a facility because, I mean, I'll take the WAC, for example. We have no indoor facilities, zero, in our whole conference, right? So, to be taken seriously, like Kevin says, as other sports are, when you have a win-loss record and there is more importance put on just regular season, then I think it forces administration to say, okay, can we do this sport and can we do it full out effectively? Or on the flip side of that, does it get cut? I think, you know, to move the sport forward, I think those are the two things you might be looking at.
I think that one thing to keep in mind also, though, I'm not talking about eliminating the invitational style meets. I'm talking about creating a team championship.
Yeah,
and you can also have an individual championship, just like tennis does. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so what I'm saying is, look at a great example is the Pac-12. Pac-12 doesn't run indoor track. They don't have there is no Pac-12 indoor track championship. It doesn't exist.
Yeah,
because there's what, two schools that have tracks. They don't run it. They don't need to worry about a team championship unless they want to qualify for a team championship, and they would have to then, you know, the qualifying would have to include at-larges in those eight events, you know what I mean? But you don't need to do it, you know? So if the Missouri Valley or the WAC, if there's only X amount of schools, well, then I guess you don't have a team-style championship. You just have the invitational-style championship like you've been having. You know what I mean? I'm not saying every conference is going to be able to do it. I do agree with you, and I heard you guys say this on the one episode before where somebody mentioned, it's like, what other sport in the world does a school sponsor and they don't have a facility for it? What? Even sports like tennis. There's at least a tennis court at the, you know, even golf, they have somewhere to call home, right? But for some reason, administrations think that it's completely okay to not even have a track, not even have anywhere to practice.
Because administrators have bastardized the sport, right? I mean,
that's what they've done.
You
got to change it. Yeah.
They look at and we'll just kind of, nobody here is employed by Bradley University anymore, so we'll say that, you know, they just want to be distant. They just want their distance runners.
I don't think they just want distance.
And you know what? If you want to do that, then that's cool because you've got
this cross country. Yeah.
They want numbers, right? So here's the beauty of track and field that no other sport can do. You can have one staff, you can have six sports, and you can have zero facilities. Okay, that's a freaking gold mine if we let them do it, right? If you say, hey, it's cool, we'll just work, we'll coach six sports, right? I'll take one salary for those six sports, and you don't even have to give me a place to train. I'll just figure it out. I'll be out in the pastures out, you know what I mean, in the cornfield someplace, and then we'll travel every weekend to go to these meets. But what Kevin's saying here, I think anyway, is that in order, change is hard, and change isn't always forward every single step, okay?
That's right.
So you're going to have to, you're going to make some, if you really want, if you're really talking about making this relevant, if you're really talking about, then guess what? The distance only Bradleys, they might not make it because nobody gives a shit about a distance only program. I hate to say it, right? They want to see people compete. They want to see, you know, meets that are interesting. So when you change the format and you force the hand of some of these administrations, some of these schools, some people might say, yeah, we don't have the money for the track. If we don't have a track, we can't have a team, so we can't have a team. But the thing is that you got six teams with one, you know what I mean? There's some incentives there is what I'm saying. But so you may have to do some addition by subtraction early on, but the people that stick it out, the people that gamble and you win, right? Now all of a sudden you've got another revenue generating sport that probably doesn't cost you a whole lot in the first place. And it's interesting and people are involved and it becomes something to see. But I don't think it happens with everybody being happy and everybody getting everything that they want all the way along the way. It's just, it's going to be rough for a minute. You know what I mean? Or maybe it doesn't have to be, but it probably will be. And you know, that might be okay.
I'm of the school of thought that attrition isn't always a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't evolve as humans because everything was hunky dory all the time. All right. We evolved as humans because we, as a species, were put under stress. That's the only way. You go all the way back to high school biology. How do you grow something in a petri dish? You got to put it under stress. You've got to create a situation where the environment is under stress. And it's only under stress that you grow, okay? There's no reason to grow if everything is hunky-dory. Yeah. And so, you know, I was talking with Mike on the Gill podcast for 3 hours. But, you know, I was talking with him at one point because my program at Toledo had a fairly significant rise, one of the best teams in the country, and then it took a step back. And I started getting complacent and all this kind of stuff. And then in going into 2008, 2009, I basically had like this epiphany, like, what is going on here? You know, and Sarah Vergote, who I mentioned earlier, she was my assistant. I just hired her from Manhattan to come back. She ran for me, and Sarah's at Ohio State now. And I basically told her, I said, you know what? If we're going to get back to being one of the best teams in the country, even if we've got to get worse at first, we need to rethink how we're doing everything. And so everything was off the table, including my entire training system. Everything was off the table. I was going to break it down to the baseline level, and I was going to build it back up. And even if that meant that we were going to be worse at first, and as soon as I did that, okay, and yeah, we did take a step back initially at first. Within 3 years, not only were we back to winning the Mid-American Conference, but we then became one of the best teams in the country, and we started qualifying as a team multiple years in a row. We qualified for a team three years in a row before I resigned, and no MAC team had ever done that. They'd never gone three times in a row. No MAC team had ever gone twice in a row. And sometimes you've got to take that step back. And, you know, I understand that we're worried about losing men's programs. I get that. But this is an unpopular opinion that I'm about ready to say, okay?
Go ahead.
My unpopular opinion is that these men, it's not like they're just floating out in the universe willy-nilly pumping gas all of a sudden. These guys are going to end up going somewhere and running track if they want to run track. If their program is dropped and they no longer run track, how serious were they about running track in the first place? People don't want to hear that, you know what I mean? But I mean, that's just the honest truth about it. These opportunities, and I know that those schools are missing out. I'm a male, and I don't want to see men's sports, you know, be canceled by any means, you know what I mean? But at the same time, it's not like these kids just suddenly disappear. They're then going to go to another school that's got track, or they're just not going to do it. And if they're not going to do it, then they weren't serious about it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So if that means that restructuring the sport means that there is some attrition along the way, and some coaches in lower listen, it's not successful programs that are getting dropped for the most part. Okay. I know William and Mary just got dropped. Yeah, that was a successful men's cross country program, 26 NCAA championships.
Yeah, very much.
They hadn't been in 15 years.
Yep.
You know, they were in a conference that only had three other teams in it. You know, so I hate seeing them get dropped. But at the same time, as a businessman now looking at it, I get it. I mean, I hate to say it, but I get it, right? So it's up to each coach at his school. It's your responsibility. You are responsible for the brand of your program. Just like I said this on Mike's program. You need to run your career and you need to run your business. You need to run your career and you need to run your program like a business. My acting career, me, Kevin Barbaro, the actor, that's a business. I run that as a business, okay? Very conscious about the brand of that business, how that business is advertised and brought out to the world, how I present myself in the world of entertainment. It's important to me because I'm going to dictate how successful I am, right? Same thing with my production company. It's up to me. All right. I'm not going to go on the nut for $100,000 and then just willy nilly, you know, work my way through it. Right. I'm going to do everything I can because I've got skin in the game. A lot of coaches, they don't have skin in the game. They just figure they're going to have their job forever. Right. So these programs that are getting dropped, okay, I'm not blaming those coaches, but what I am saying is, what are you doing to make your program special? What are you doing to make your program relevant so that when it comes time to cut somebody and they're looking there and it's a board of trustees, right? People that don't really know anything about athletics, but we know what they know: wins, losses, All-Americans. They understand that shit. How do they not understand that? And you need to make your alumni involved. That's one great thing that Dennis Mitchell at Akron does, right? Now, they just dropped men's cross country, which is a farce. Okay, that was a
let's not jump into
move
that.
By the athletes.
That's a whole other podcast right there. That's,
you know. Yeah, but you know what he does do really well? I mean, Dennis and I was in the conference room for 15 years, right? And we butted heads on a lot of stuff. But what he does do, and what he did do, and he continues to do, he makes his program relevant within the community of Akron and Akron University. Now, there was nothing he could do to keep this guy from dropping cross country, even as successful as he was. But you know what he did do? They didn't drop men's track. They didn't drop men's indoor, right? Because they knew that that program is successful enough to keep. Now, they've never won a MAC cross country championship, ever. They'd only ever qualified, I believe, one male to the NCAA cross country championships ever, right? Mm-hmm. So I can see from a business standpoint why it's going to be on the chopping block, okay? But there's no way that they were going to be able to drop indoor and outdoor track. No way. Because he's created that brand. And every track coach, I don't care if you're Division I, II, III, NAIA, whatever. What do you do? You are your business. This is you. This program. And here's the deal. It's a terrible business model. It's the worst business model I've ever seen. You're going to invest, even in a lower level program, you're investing what? $250,000 in scholarships, coaches, travel, everything. Name one other business in the world that somebody's going to hand over $250,000 to somebody, and then the entire business is going to be run by 18 to 23-year-olds. The whole thing. The entire success of that business is going to be depending upon some kid that's only ever worked at McDonald's in their life. And you're gambling $250,000. You're gambling $500,000, maybe a mil, right? It's a terrible business model. So because it's a terrible business model, as the businessman, the coach, the head coach, dude, you got to be a better businessman than the other guys, right? And that is a part of coaching that people don't get, you know? And I think that you have a lot of even successful coaches. Listen, a blind squirrel can find a nut, right? There are coaches at schools that you'd have to go out of your way not to be successful at. It doesn't mean that they're great coaches. You know what I mean? You're in a good position. You're in a good spot, man, you know? But, you know, when you have coaches at big schools saying, I don't want the NCAA telling me what to do. It's like, what the hell are you talking about, bro? You know what I mean? It's their shit. This is their business. They are the NCAA. You are a tiny little piece of that NCAA. If they want to change something about it, your job is to adapt to that change. You can fight it all you want, but there's a reason why there's 100,000 McDonald's in the world, and every one of them, when you walk into it, you can order the same thing, and it's going to taste just like the one that you bought 3,000 miles away, because they have one way of doing things for the entire franchise. The NCAA, you guys are just a franchise. And so if the NCAA wants to make a change, then you've got to make that change and adapt to it. Instead of just continuing to say, well, we're different. Why should we change?
I think the one thing you hit on before, and I've heard this been talked on from other coaches, other people in general. I've heard some people talk about it in general. I got to give Beth Halford Sullivan credit here for the term I'm going to use of the elevator speech. You have to be able to promote your sport the best you can. And that's not just, you know, you have to understand your sport. You have to understand the fact of how many minorities you have on your sport, what ethnicity you're doing, where you're going with the sport, what you're going to be able to do with that sport, your gender stuff with that sport. How does that work in the whole grand scheme of things? How much money are you bringing in for all your walk-on kids? How much money are you not paying for your scholarship kids? How many of your kids are on full rides versus not, that are paying, hey, we're going to give them 40%. They're going to get another 30%, you know, 30% for academics. They're paying 20%, or was it another 30% to come here? As you can tell at Iowa, I didn't learn math, but like that kind of stuff. Are you able to do that stuff?
Yeah.
Administrators along those lines, what good things are you doing? But then also, I think you have to sit down with your sports marketing department, your SIDs, and say, hey, here is what I want to do. I was ecstatic this year. I'll give her credit. Haley did a hell of a job. She came in and said, okay, brand new. Here's what I've done. I've been in Washington, a couple other places. What do you want to do? I said, here's what I want to do. She's like, give me 24 hours. She gave me a schedule and said, this is what we'll do every day. This is what we'll do once a week. I'm like, you've got to be kidding. We're going to get promoted once a week. Now, the best thing is, the unfortunate, the best thing at the same time is that with COVID, you know, there's not much else going on right now for Conference USA. There's cross country. And there's football, the two things going on right now. Now there's some spring sports. Don't get me wrong. Some of the guys are playing their spring schedules now, but we get that opportunity to be front and center. So why not put more marketing stuff out there? But next year, Lord willing, that we don't have COVID, everything's kind of been, we got a vaccine, everything's good. What are you doing going back to do that stuff? You have stuff on Instagram, on Twitter, on social media, on what you're doing. Are your kids taking over? No. What are they doing to help things out? So you can promote your brand, because again, it's having the brand that is attractive and be able to do things
like this. I think Kevin alluded to it too. I think, you know, an important thing for especially head coaches is you've got to be able to read the room, right? Yes. Like you've got to understand where you fit within your community, where you fit within the university, where you fit within your conference. And I think all of those factors are at play there, because I know, you know, for here at UTRGV, like community involvement is huge, and having representation within people or within the community and having kids from South Texas is really important to this university. So if we can do it with kids that are local, yeah, we're going to spice it up with some kids from, you know, up north and from California, and we're going to mix it up. But it is really, really vital that we have that piece, that community piece in our program. And so I think it's really important for coaches to read the room and understand how to make their program relevant, because it's not the same at every place.
Right. And it's really, you know, a big part of creating a brand for yourself, for your business, for your program, is understanding, like you say, understanding how to promote it. A lot of coaches don't get it. So like, it's a similar situation when I'm on the nut for a big music concert, right? I've got to figure out who's my audience? How do I reach them? You know? And I also have to make sure that I've got the people who are going to be involved in the concert engaged in this marketing plan and engaged in this PR plan. So like, as an example, I had, I rented an outdoor facility, a field, and I had Travis Tritt. This was 2 Mays ago, right? So I was on the nut for Travis Tritt up in New York. Well, I was constantly working with Travis Tritt's PR people because I needed him to get on Instagram live, you know, and do a shout out. I needed him to go and do a Facebook post. I needed him to engage. And you've got to get your student athletes engaged. You as a coach, you've got to get engaged. You know, don't leave it up to sports information, you know, because those guys have to answer to somebody else too, you know, and you know, you got to get in there and say, what can I do? You know, I think that another problem that coaches have in general, and this isn't just track coaches, I think it's all coaches.
No, go ahead.
And I know I was guilty of this too, was that when I go in, a lot of times you feel as though you got to fight every battle, right? Me, I was never like that, actually. I knew that I could win the war in the end. I was going to give up here and there certain things. I was going to offer my help. What can I do to help you to help me, right? Jerry Maguire, help me help you. You know, that whole scene, you know what I mean?
That's a good one right there. Yeah, that's a good one.
And, you know, you got to get engaged. And don't fight every single battle because you know what you become? You become a problem. And people don't want to be a problem. You know what I mean? They don't want to deal with problems. Athletic directors, when it comes to non-revenue sports, they don't want to talk to you. I mean, you know, they're going to be nice to you in the hallway and stuff, but if he's talking to you, then generally speaking, it's because something is wrong. Trust me. So
we all know this is true.
And but you know, when it comes to your support staff, Beth is great. I mean, she hits it right on the head. You know, I've worked with Beth on many things for many years, and she's absolutely right. You need to know. And you know what's funny? Well, it's not funny. It's actually sad. Is I know so many coaches that have been coaching for so long that could not coach a single event outside their own event area. That blows my mind. I'm not saying you got to be an expert at it, right? But how do you not educate yourself? You know, if you look at a Division I head football coach, he knows everything that there is to know about every position on the field. How can he not? He's got to make decisions ultimately. Now he's going to hire position coaches that are experts in those fields, just like we have event coaches that are experts in those fields. But he's going to have more than just a broad-based knowledge of the each position. He has to. Baseball coaches, they have to. Basketball coaches, they have to. They have to understand the whole thing. We have coaches that couldn't really even tell you what
how much a shot put weighs?
Yeah, how much a discus weighs, you know? How many grams in a javelin? What's a good javelin throw? Yeah, you know, we just had the second furthest javelin throw in the world. I don't know if you guys saw that the other day.
Yeah, that was the performance.
That was sick.
I'm sorry.
97 meters. That's the one we forgot.
We forgot something when we started out here. It was incredible.
Man, was that sick. I mean, he pulled Al Cantello. I don't know if you know who Al Cantello is. Al Cantello. He was the Navy head coach. He was also the American record holder, if not the world record holder at one point in the javelin back in the day. Al Cantello broke both of his wrists once because when he threw, he landed. Yeah. So this guy, when he landed like Al Cantello, you know, and on all fours, belly up, man, 97 meters, 97.28, whatever the hell it was. You know, but I'll bet you less than half of the distance coaches in the country could tell you right now that there was a 97 meter throw. You should be soaking this in, bro. You know what I mean? Like, this is track, man. That's sick. You know what I mean? It's the length of a football field, bro. It's in meters. You know? I don't know. We just don't spend enough time educating ourselves.
Well, you know, our own sport. Kind of something you said very early in this whole conversation, and it kind of, I don't remember exactly what you said, but it kind of resonated with me about, is it that you talk to other coaches and you like learning about other sports?
Love it.
And I think that's a problem with a lot of athletic directors. And again, I'm kind of, watch what I say here. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of athletic directors that only know football and only know basketball. They don't know sports. And that's just a shame, because if you're an administrator and you're in charge of all these other sports, you should know something about them. You should know how they operate and what is good. Like, what is a good throw? What is a good run? What's a good jump? What are good performances? I mean,
I think more or less they're hired to be businessmen now. I mean, you always hear about, coaches that become athletic directors and things like that. But I think university presidents are looking maybe more at the business side of it.
I would say, these athletic directors who are hired as to run small businesses, right? Division I athletics. It's a small business. My wife works for a company that's valued at like $6 billion. There's not one athletics department that's anywhere close. So, big business is relative, but it's how well do they understand business? They're not out in corporate America. They're not, you're not seeing the CEO of Disney becoming an AD at Texas A&M. So again, how big a businessman are they? I don't know. I get frustrated that I think athletic directors need to understand athletics as a whole better. And I think that would do every coach would be in a better position.
It's changed. So are you saying you want an AD? You want an AD job? Is that?
I would love to be an AD. I would love it because I like sports. I like watching Saturday afternoons. I like watching more than just football. I mean, you know me. I've been watching the Tour de France every day. So cycling is going to be a sport.
You're hardcore, man. You're hardcore.
It's a athletic directors in general are an interesting bunch because, there's something that is never, I don't want to say never because I just never say never, but the whole culture of athletic directors, for the most part, these guys are always looking for the next job. There is no loyalty to the school. Their whole goal is to win something and to build something. That's it. So when they come in, that's all they're focused on. They're focused on self-preservation and how can I get to the next job? And if you look at athletic directors across the board, particularly at Power Five schools, very few of them came from anywhere other than a revenue sport. Now, Oklahoma State, I believe their athletic director is a former golf coach. I believe the University of South Carolina is Ray Tanner, who was the baseball coach and won that College World Series. There's a couple of female athletic directors, but they came from women's basketball for the most part, So they mostly only come from that world. Very few athletic directors come from the world of non-revenue sports, if any. I mean, outside of the golf coach that is the Oklahoma State guy. But they're always just looking. They want to build something. They want to build they want to renovate the football stadium, or they want to, their goal is to raise money. And, but you're right. I mean, they don't educate themselves on what's going on within each individual sport. And I think that that's where it's important to get to your point that we become. I say we. I'm not in it anymore. But that track becomes more like other sports, because if it's easy to understand, then even the knucklehead athletic director that's just a football guy, right?
That's it.
Can understand wins and losses. Mm-hmm. He can understand all Americans. He can understand team championships or whatever it is. He may not understand 97 meters. I mean, he may not even understand what a meter is, bro. to be honest with you. but
you tell me through it, the length of the football field, he gets it.
He gets it. Yeah. Dude, through the length of the football field, man. But you know, I think that something has to change or it's just going to die. You know, I listen sometimes, you know, on Twitter, and I hear some of the old school guys that, well, you know, back when the dual meets between Oregon and Cal and all this kind of stuff, people don't give a shit about that anymore. It's 50 fucking years ago, man. I mean, they don't care, because 50 years ago, it was two channels on the television. What else are they going to do? Look at pictures of those Oregon meets. These guys are in fedoras and an overcoat. Who the hell has a fedora? Yeah.
I used to when I was younger.
These guys talking about these meets, you might as well be talking about landing on the moon, if we even did. And that's a whole other podcast, bro. Don't get me started on that, brother.
Let's not get you started on that one. That was just throw that.
No, man. That was like, you guys know I invented the Track and Field podcast. You know, I am the godfather of podcasts.
You said that on Mike's show. And I remember, and I got to pull up my phone here because I had to download some of the songs from Coffee Talk.
Man.
But I used to listen to that on a fairly regular basis. And
yeah, bro. You know, the thing that I tried to do, and this actually is all part of this whole big picture. I tried to make Track and Field relevant within like the regular normal world. That's what we're trying to do with American Track League, right? That's what I think that track coaches should be trying to do. Stop being different. You know, it's cool to be cool, right? You don't have to just continue to be different than everybody. You got some old school Coffee Talk on your podcast.
Oh no, I was just
I would rock out. Hey man, I'm a big 70s guy, bro.
Well, you did a show.
That was a big part of the show.
It was like Southern Rock or something was the theme.
Yeah, man.
And yes. I don't even want to say
playing a lot of Skinner.
Yeah. Well, the one song that I had to download. I had to download the Allman Brothers.
Allman Brothers, yeah, bro.
And
yeah.
I was like, oh. I just hadn't been I was never an Allman Brothers fan before Coffee Talk.
I'm telling you, man, like, Allman Brothers.
That's some good stuff right there.
I know now.
Skinner.
Oh, yeah, come on.
Well, that's,
yeah, man.
But the Allman Brothers app, that was a Coffee Talk one that I was like, wow, man, this is a great song.
Yeah, man. Yeah. But, you know, the thing was, it's the same thing as now, man. You've got to brand yourself. There needs to be something about you that stands out. You know, like even in my acting career, I mean, dude, I'm an actor in New York City and in Los Angeles. You know how many thousands of actors there are? You know, when I get asked to go in for an audition, I mean, it's me and 1,000 dudes that look just like me, right? But I work more than any other actor that I know. That's not a, you know, big time actor, but particularly in the commercial world, I book constantly because I make sure that there's just something different about me, you know, because I am my own business. I'm responsible for my own success. It's the same thing with your track program, your cross country program. What are you doing to make you stand out? Or are you just comfortable hiding in the back of the room? You know what I mean? Because look, next time you got a all sports coaches meeting, check out the coaches in the back of the room. I'll bet you $100 right now they're the worst coaches in your athletic department because they want to sit back there and hide, you know? Not me, man. I want to be up front. I want the athletic director to see me because I'm confident in the brand that I'm putting out there until it went belly up. But, I mean, you know.
Gotta take risks, huh?
Hey, man. I was at the top of the mountain, bro. I was at the top of the mountain.
I tell you what, you've hit on a couple things right there that we definitely need to, I mean, you definitely need to step out. You definitely need to branch out. You definitely need to make sure that you've marketed yourself correctly. And you definitely make sure that your administrators know you for more than good, of course, than any of the bad.
Yeah.
You can sit down and work through things, make sure they know who you are, but make sure you acquire it in a good way so you have the success and you have a good relationship with them so you can move forward in what you're doing and be able to promote your sport better. Maybe, you know, do more things that maybe you're asking for and that kind of stuff. So if that raise comes up or, you know, you want to fly your team a little more or kids out to, let's say, California or or, you know, out to Maine or something like that. That was my favorite trips in college. Like that kind of stuff. You actually have that ability. But we can probably talk about this for hours. I'm not going to lie. I don't know if I want to go for another hour and a half. Actually, we could. But at the same time, we won't just due to the fact of respect of everybody's time here on the podcast and those listening. We appreciate it. Absolutely. Thank you for, you know, popping a top or pouring some sweet tea, coffee, whatever the case might be for you, whatever you have going on with, you know, if you're walking, if you're running, if you're, you know, just sitting back, relaxing on a beautiful afternoon, listening to the podcast. We appreciate you. Awesome thing. We've moved up to number 27 in the country for running podcasts.
That is top 30.
Top 30. We made
top
it.
Top 30.
One. We're coming for everything up on top. At the same time, we want to thank everybody, you know, us from the bottom of our heart, from those people who, you know, our panelists as well, our guests as well. We say thank you to everybody who's been doing this kind of stuff. Kevin, honestly, great insight, great job. And one thing we've always tried to do with this is truly our basis when we started this conversation, when we started this podcast of pulling a chair to the table, pulling a chair up to the table. This is exactly it, the conversations that coaches have behind the scenes that honestly, we don't skeet around. We don't bullshit with it. Just go straight forward and say, this is how it goes. So Kevin, thank you for your time. I know you're in California. I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
You got it, brother.
Yeah, man. But in general, to John and Mike and to Darren, appreciate you guys being on the podcast. It was another incredible conversation. If you like this podcast, please, of course, share it on iTunes. Leave us a review. Tell us we're doing a great job. Tell us we're doing a terrible job. Use Spotify, Anchor, share it around, whatever the case might be. But let us know how we're doing. Shoot us an email. Say maybe something we need to do better. But as always, gentlemen, ladies, thank you for taking the time. And we look forward to hopefully doing better for you next time. So until next time, say thank you and have a great day. Yeah.